all of us want one thing, and that is happiness. And I started to ask myself the question, why don't we have more happiness? I began to discover that happiness is really our true nature, but we kind of screw it up. You know, we adopt all these layers of thinking and pondering that make us further and further away from our core happiness.
Welcome to Zestful Aging, where I speak with fascinating people from all over the world, from every walk of life, who will inspire you to live with zest. I'm your host, Nicole Christina, and my mission is to bring you optimism about aging and help you make full use of the new opportunities that only come at this stage of life. To find out more about the podcast, hop on over to zestfulaging.com. And while you're there, sign up for my weekly email newsletter, The Insider, where you will get fun and quirky tidbits about the show and my exploits, including when I went python hunting in Florida and my participation in the National Senior Games. And if you love the podcast, I'd be grateful if you shared it with your friends. Our music is courtesy of Judy Banker, who was a previous guest on the show. Find out more at judybanker.com. And our technical director is Stephen Litweiler. Zestful Aging is all about being adventurous, and that's why I'm planning a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Finland, and I'm inviting you, my listeners. Why Finland? Well, it's been named the happiest country on the planet for the sixth year in a row, and if you like nature and design, you are in for a real thrill. We're going to start out in Helsinki with our private guide and work our way up to Lapland, where we will be treated to the Aurora Borealis and some of the most magnificent nature on the planet. There will be saunas, wildlife, snowshoeing, reindeer sledding, local food, and some of the cleanest water and air on the planet. We will learn what makes Finns so happy and how we can bring some of that back with us. Will it be cold? Yep, that's part of the adventure. The dates are January 22nd, 2024 to January 29th, 2024, and space is extremely limited. Find out all the details on my website, zestfulaging.com. I can't wait to meet you and share this once-in-a-lifetime experience. Our medical professionals are really suffering. Burnout is at new highs, causing serious problems, including medical mistakes, addiction, depression, and even suicide. And medical folks are leaving their professions in record numbers, which is a problem that affects everyone. Today, we're going to speak with Stanford University professor and physician about his new book, Gain Without Pain. His mission is to make de-stressing accessible and bring more happiness and resilience to all of us. Welcome to the show, Dr. Greg Hammer.
So wonderful to be with you, a former Stanfordite at that.
Yes, yes, I have wonderful memories of riding my bike. I'm in upstate New York now, so it's a whole different deal. So let me start by saying, you know, I love that your book is so accessible. You know, you don't need special clothes or complicated breathing patterns or to go on silent meditation retreats. Was that something that you started off with really intentionally to make this very user-friendly?
Absolutely. I started thinking about the one thing that all, now almost 8 million of us want. It used to be 7 million when I started thinking about it. But all of us want one thing, and that is happiness. And I started to ask myself the question, why don't we have more happiness? I began to discover that happiness is really our true nature, but we kind of screw it up. You know, we adopt all these layers of thinking and pondering that make us further and further away from our core happiness. And I might call these elements that we have, that we've added on to our base of happiness, simply the way our brains are wired. So we add all this wiring, these neural connections, these synapses, and we reinforce those by the way we think. So kind of bad thinking, if you will, not to be judgmental about the way we think, but wrong thinking begets wrong thinking. And the good news is that the opposite is also true, that right thinking begets right thinking. And our brains have this magical quality called neuroplasticity. So we can actually change the way we think. And so to make this very accessible, and it should be accessible to everybody because the principles are very simple. They're manifest in all important religious and philosophic traditions. And it's easy to have a conversational approach when talking about these principles. And so that's what I tried to do in that book.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Would you mind going through the acronym, the GAIN acronym, with us and touching briefly on each element?
Sure, of course. Well, the letters GAN, or the word GAIN being an acronym, stand for gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. And the practice, the GAIN practice, which I embrace and practice daily and teach, and end up talking a lot about to various people like yourself and your listeners, is very simple. Many people try meditation, but they believe that they have to sit still for a half an hour at a time and not scratch an itch and maybe even sit in an uncomfortable position to begin with their left ankle behind their neck.
And a fly buzzing around.
Exactly, but don't pay attention to that elephant in the corner of the room if you can. And also they think that during that 30-minute period, they're not supposed to have any thoughts, to banish all thoughts from their head. And so when thoughts creep in and pass by, they feel as though they've failed. So GAIN meditation is different than that in a couple of really important ways. The first is it could be as little as 3 minutes. I tend to sit a little bit longer than that for my GAIN sessions, sometimes quite a bit longer, but sometimes 3 minutes. And the other thing is, you find a comfortable place to sit in any position you like. I would recommend probably not lying down because you might fall asleep. Mm-hmm. And so brevity, comfort, and I'm going to give you thoughts actually to embrace. So rather than try to ask you to ban all thoughts from your head, I'm actually going to give you a series of thoughts that are the GAIN acronym words and related concepts. And of course, all of this is linked to the breath, which is beautiful for so many ways because we may go the whole day without really breathing properly. And that actually adds to our exhaustion. So there's a very simple breathing exercise that is recommended by many forms of meditation. And so we start with that. And so typically we get up in the morning and we open the blinds and hopefully there's some light outside at that hour. And we do our morning hygiene thing. And then we have pre-selected a comfortable place to sit where we can be in a quiet environment and be by ourselves for a few minutes, maybe before the kids are up or what have you. We sit in a chair and we get ourselves comfortable and we gently close our eyes. And I'm going to watch the clock a little bit so I don't take more than 3 minutes. We begin to breathe in a very purposeful manner. So we're going to slow our breath down. We're going to slowly inhale through our nose, noticing the slightly sweet nature of the air that we're breathing in. And we may breathe in to a count of three and then pause to a count of three. Take a little bit more in breath near the end of the pause and then just slowly exhale to a count of four. And we can exhale through our nose or our mouth, which is ever more comfortable.
Wow.
Okay. So we breathe in to a count of three, we pause to a count of three, we take another slight in breath, and we breathe out to a count of four. And we're sitting comfortably with our eyes closed, and we begin to contemplate that for which we're grateful. So we all have so much for which to be grateful. I'm right now looking out the window at the beautiful light outside, and now I'll close my eyes again, and I'm grateful for this safe place to sit, because in many parts of the world or other parts of the world, it's not so safe. There's a lot more concern about being attacked by an enemy aggressor. So we're very grateful for being in this safe, warm place, surrounded by light. We're grateful for our loved ones. In my case, I'm so grateful for my job, the privilege of serving other people, especially children, but children and their families. I feel so fortunate, and I've been able to do this for such a long time. I'm actually getting it down. So I'm grateful for the loved ones in my life, my friends, my new dog, my job, my health, my relative health. It's not perfect, but sure could be worse. So rather than focus on one little ache or pain, I focus on the other 90% of my body that's functioning perfectly. So I'm grateful. And I transition to acceptance. And acceptance is important because pain is as much a part of our life as joy. And pain is always there in the background, but it doesn't have to cause suffering. There's a formula in the book, suffering equals pain times resistance. Mm-hmm. We love formulas in medicine. So we have a similar formula for our blood pressure being flow or cardiac output times our vascular resistance. So in this case, suffering equals pain times resistance. So we actually, rather than resist the pain, we accept the pain. We focus on a particular pain. We've all lost loved ones. I lost my mother recently. I lost my beautiful boy at the age of 29, 5 years ago.
So we focus
on something painful, and we actually bring it in. We bring it closer and closer, and we open our chest, and we open our heart, and we bring this pain inside, and we actually envelop it and nurture it with our heart, and we sit with it as we breathe. And we notice that the pain is not as bad as we thought. And we can ask ourselves the question at some point, can I live with this pain forever? And the answer is yes. And we transition to intention. And we have to be intentional or purposeful because our brains are wired in ways that tend to veil our happiness. We have a negativity bias. We tend to remember the negative and forget the positive. And we dwell on the past and the future in ways that are maladaptive and create regret and shame and low self-esteem and self-judgment and fear and anxiety when we overthink the future. So let's spend 5 seconds just intentionally thinking of that which is happening right now. We're sitting with our eyes closed. We're taking these long, slow, deep breaths. We're noticing the pressure of the chair against our body. We're noticing the tingling sensation on the bottom of our feet. We're noticing the sweetness of the air we're breathing in through our nose. We're noticing the straight nature of our spine. We're noticing perhaps a sound in the distance, maybe a car going by or an airplane going by. These are our sensations in the present moment, which is really the only moment we ever experience. And we sit with these. And we remind ourselves we intend to do this more often. We intend to be more present more often and more positive, really with effort, with purpose. We tend to focus on the positive. And we transition to non-judgment. And when we get to non-judgment, we actually, let's say we picture an image of the moon suspended in space. There's been a little bit of news about the NASA space program recently. We think of one of these beautiful images presented to us by NASA of the Earth, apparently suspended in space. And it's clear to us that the Earth is neither good nor bad. The Earth is just a planet. It is neither good or bad. It's kind of beautiful, but it's neither good nor bad. And it's only logical for us to think that we too are just the human being that we are, with all of our flaws and all of our strengths. We are neither good nor bad. We are just the human that we are. I am just the human that I am. I am that I am. I am. And we link this I am-ness to our breath, slowly in, pausing, a little extra inhale, and a slow exhalation. And we repeat this breath again, the I am-ness floating on the breath. And we slowly open our eyes. and we're ready to go out in the world on this beautiful day.
So I'm thinking about my clients, people I know, the non-judgment, and you talk about in your book, and I think is so relevant, that judgment is such an energy suck and doesn't really get us anywhere except tired. So what I'm wondering about is, how do we separate discernment? That, no, I don't want to spend time with this person because, let's just say, they don't have the same values I do, for example.
Yes, good example.
Talk to me about this, what I see kind of a tricky balance of not judging, but also making decisions based on being congruent to our own values.
Excellent question. You bring up an important point of distinguishing between discernment and judgment. And I'll just sort of follow on the example that you started to give, where you're deciding whether to spend time with this friend that you really have little in common with. And so you have an hour for a cup of coffee, maybe mid-morning. Maybe you have a half an hour. And you have a choice. You can either get together with Mary, who is a person who's very pragmatic and very positive and forward-looking, has a great sense of humor, but really kind of sees things for the way they are. And you feel akin to her in terms of her values and yours. Or, you know, Alyssa actually asked you to have lunch with her or have some coffee with her this morning. But, you know, she's kind of whiny and rather ungrateful. She comes from a wealthy family, but she is complaining about her circumstances all the time and complaining about her marriage and other relationships with women that you know as well, and many of whom you like. And she's just kind of a downer. And sometimes you get together with her and you want to help her, but you're always left feeling a little bit down yourself. So should I devote this half hour to Mary or to my friend Alyssa? And you discern that your preference is to spend the time with Mary, because Mary always uplifts you and you really feel a solid connection with her. And doing this, you're discerning rather than judging. Okay. You're calling it like it is. You're calling Mary like she is. You're calling Alyssa out like she is. But it doesn't mean that either of them have to be good or bad.
So you don't have to make Alyssa bad. You just have to, it's more about a preference and a connection or congruence. It doesn't have to have this overlay of, what a horrible person.
Exactly. It's somebody you rather get together with Mary on this particular occasion. If Alyssa's in crisis, you'll get together with her in the future. But on this occasion, you know, you feel that kinship, you feel that closeness with Mary, and you discern that your time is better spent under these circumstances with Mary. It's like if you have two ways to go to work. I often, if I'm going to the airport in San Francisco from Stanford, I can drive up 280, which is absolutely beautiful. You drive by a reservoir and through a wooded area. There's not as much traffic as there is on 101. Or I can take 101, and maybe it's a couple of miles shorter. Or I can tell the Uber driver to take 280 or 101. It's just, I'm discerning between which path to take based on which one suits me at that time. And, you know, maybe there's an accident on 280, or maybe there's a time when I need to get there 5 minutes faster, so I take 101. But I'm just making a choice. It doesn't mean that one is bad and one is good. And that may be a little abstract, because it's just a road, after all, which is more obviously neither good nor bad. But people and animals and issues in the world are neither good nor bad. The world does not comport with our sensibilities and preferences. And until we really realize this, we're going to be resisting. We're pushing back. We're trying to change things that we cannot change. And that is resistance that amplifies our suffering.
Hi, everyone. Have you listened to my interviews with Dr. Bill Rawls? He's been on the show twice, and after I read his book on cellular health and learned about his high standards for quality control, I was sold. I placed an order for Vital Plant supplements immediately. And I encourage you to learn about his work by hopping over to vitalplan.com. If you enter Zestful15, they will give you 15% off your first order. I'm excited for you to try these products. I think you're going to be very impressed. Now back to the show.
And in terms of injustice in the world, how might we orient ourselves to seeing something that, as humans, we all agree is wrong? Let's say murder or, you know, these kinds of things. How do we orient ourselves to the existence of this and the people who are doing this kind? Let's just say Putin, for example. How do we orient ourselves towards a man who's leading this, you know, murderous rampage throughout Ukraine?
Good question. You know, I think there are different circumstances when we look at the world, and there are times when there seemed to be a leader like Putin who does not act in the interest of the world and appears to be an evil person. And clearly, people who do violence to others are themselves unhappy and imbalanced. Mm-hmm. And where did that unhappiness and imbalance come from? He didn't mm-hmm. just choose to be that way. And I think he has responsibility for what he does, for sure. But for whatever his circumstances growing up, he was led to be, I would say, rather insecure, because somebody who puffs out their chest and has pictures published of themselves without a shirt on, riding on a horse, and advertises their black belt in martial arts and, you know, pushes other people around, are generally mm-hmm. feeling small and insecure. And the bottom line is that there are evil people in the world, people that act in ways that hurt others. But this is something that we cannot change. And I guess I would just go back to the Serenity Prayer and say mm-hmm. that it's important to discern between what we can change and what we cannot change mm-hmm. that apparently mm-hmm. goes against our values and against our wants and needs. And if it's something that we cannot change, then we must work on accepting it, because mm-hmm. to resist it causes us to suffer. So I think an example that you started out with Putin, I think if we overthink it, you know, we need to be aware of what's going on in the world. We need to send sympathy and empathy to our brothers and sisters in Ukraine, for example, and maybe send them some money. And maybe if we're in a position to serve, consider doing so. But beyond that, if we can't change it, mm-hmm. Then I think we need to accept it. And so I think there's not a lot that we're going to do as individuals about Putin. And mm-hmm. maybe it's wise to talk about it occasionally to drum up support for Ukraine and the United States so that our political leaders remain committed to this effort. But beyond that, I think we are overthinking it and overdoing it in a way. And so we have to be, you know, life is an art, right? We all know that. And so we have to be purposeful about the amount of time we devote to thinking and doing around some of the evil that goes on in the world, and decide at what point to really work on accepting it and bringing it into our heart. And, you know, maybe even having sympathy for somebody like Putin, who's clearly a very imbalanced, unhappy person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like you were possibly also thinking about limiting how much media we consume. Is that part of this?
I think it is, because I think, again, it's discernment. We can either enjoy the beauty in the world at every possible moment, or spend, you know, 12 hours a day listening to CNN and mm-hmm. Fox News and mm-hmm. you name it, and really overthinking mm-hmm. it. And this is a quality that our brains have. We tend to overthink the past and the future. And generally, this brings, we do so in a maladaptive way. So we overthink the past and we have a negativity bias. So we tend to think of things negatively. And in our own case, we think of things that bring us regret and shame and low self-esteem and self-judgment. And we overthink the future and we think of, with our negativity bias, the worst thing that can happen, and we catastrophize and we get afraid. And, you know, 50,000 years ago with our early Homo sapien forebears sitting in a cave, there might have been a saber-toothed tiger lurking at the mouth of the cave. It may have been adaptive from an evolutionary standpoint to be wary and keep our family safe, as though there was something bad often about to happen. It may have caused us to live longer and procreate more and spread these wariness genes in the population. And here we are 50,000 years later, and there is no longer a saber-toothed tiger lurking outside the mouth of our home. And yet we have this quality still of being wary and negative and sort of obsessed with what might happen, even though the worst of it rarely does. And it doesn't do us any good.
Has using this gain process, well, let me back up. How has it changed your life? I know you have suffered a huge tragedy of your son's suicide, and I'm curious how using these tools has allowed you to move through some of that grief, and also how it works. You're seeing a lot of trauma every single day treating children in the hospital.
Absolutely. Well, when I decided to get into intensive care medicine and do anesthesia for children with congenital heart disease, I knew I was going to be seeing a lot of suffering and a lot of death, a lot of really hopelessly ill children and their families. And I thought, I'm either going to be resisting a lot of what I experience, and people said, well, don't get too close to your patients because it'll tear your heart apart. And I thought, no, that's not me. I'm going to actually dive in, roll up my sleeves, and really confront my thoughts about death and pain and suffering, and figure it out, figure out a way that I can deal with it openly and honestly, and be close to my patients and their families. And so I've worked on that for decades. And, you know, I'm like I said, I'm getting it down. You know, this is what happened. Like, right before you get to your retirement, you're starting to feel like you're getting it. it's changed me a lot. The death of my son, you know, these are opportunities for growth, as sad and painful as they are, because, you know, when a friend rejects you for reasons that are unclear, or when a loved one dies, or when a patient dies and you realize if you had only known 5 minutes earlier what you knew at the end, you might have forestalled it or prevented it. This has certainly happened. I mean, if you do what I do, there are going to be at least a handful of times in your career where you could have saved someone and you didn't. And you have to live with that. And so it goes to the A in gain. It goes to acceptance. You know, even if it's something you think you might have been able to change, you have to remember that you don't want to revise history. You were doing your best the whole time. I was doing my best with my son the whole time he was growing up. I was dealing with my circumstances of working quite a large number of hours a week, but I did my best with him. I always meant to have the quality time with him and my daughter, and my daughter is quite different than he. And so I have to realize that I'm not to blame. And similarly with my patients who have had negative outcomes, who might have had a different outcome had I done something differently.
Yes.
My spiritual teacher told me 10 years ago, Greg, I know how committed you are. I know how loving you are. I know what a good clinician you are. And you have to remember that you are doing your very best. And sometimes it's just like being a parent. You know, there's a fork in the road. You don't know which way to go. Should you be tough love, or should you be a good listener and permissive, or somewhere in between? And you often don't know until after the fact. And so the same thing happens in clinical medicine. You know, should I put a needle in the chest? Should I get an x-ray? Should I put in a breathing tube? Should I do some other diagnostic tests? And then the patient dies because they had a a large collection of fluid in their around their heart that you could have evacuated with a needle. And so these are decisions that you just, there's no right answer except in retrospect. And again, with our negativity bias and our dwelling on the past, our mm-hmm. difficulty being present where happiness lives, dwelling on the past in a negative way, overthinking a negative event will lead to shame and regret and low self-esteem and self-judgment. And I've certainly been there. But I have to say, with the game practice, when I'm being ungrateful or resisting or unintentional or judgmental, a light bulb goes off and I realize what I'm doing. And I found this with others with whom I've worked. That light bulb moment, I'm driving in my car and going to work and there's a guy in the lane to the right of me and he just moves into my lane without using his turn signal. And I start to formulate all these judgments about how he's inconsiderate, he's not a good driver, et cetera, et cetera. And then mm-hmm. I realize I just did my gain meditation and the end is non-judgment and it doesn't help me to judge him. He was just not paying attention. I'm sure I've done that. It's neither good nor bad. It just is the way people are, and drop that judgment. And then I get a little dopamine hit and a smile out of it rather than something negative.
There's something that I learned, I don't know, maybe it was 20 years ago, about this whole judgment thing and how it's work, and our brain is loving to categorize. But there's this expression I like that you can rest, saying to yourself, saying to your brain, you can rest. You don't have to do that. And it sort of unhooks us from the work of judgment.
Lovely. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
So this is so helpful. I love how user-friendly it is. And it's just something, like a little toolbox you can carry with you without getting super fancy. And so, so helpful. Where can people find out more about your work?
The easiest place is on the website, Greg Hammer, MD, GREGHAMMER, MD.com. And there's okay. a lot of material there. There's a link to the book. The book is on Amazon, Gain Without Pain, Greg Hammer. Mm-hmm. Working on number 3 right now for teenagers. It's about mindfulness for teenagers, and it incorporates the GAIN approach. And I've got a wonderful co-author. And we are just about finished writing, and we are submitting our book proposal to my book editor. And so that's going on. But in the meantime, the first book is available on Amazon and available through the website. And there's a lot of other material there, including, I'm hoping, a recording of this chat that you and I are having.
Yes, indeed. I'd be honored. Well, I want to let you know I'm going to send this chat to one of my clients who was an ER doc and nearly killed him. It's been such a pleasure, and I really appreciate your work, and so lovely to spend time with you this morning.
Likewise. The truth is very simple. We find it all around us if we're looking for it, and I hope that the GAIN elements are helpful to you and others whom you are helping.
Thank you so much for joining us on Zestful Aging. If you like the podcast, please share it with some of your friends. If you think decluttering could help you feel better and you could use a little assistance with that, check out the online course I've developed with professional organizer and designer Carrie Luteran. It's called Too Much Stuff. And too much stuff is different from other courses or articles or guidance you may have used up. We give you clear steps to deal with the clutter and the tools to help you face the overwhelming feelings and the emotions that come up when we're going through our clutter. And a lot of those emotions are just feeling anxious or guilty or just basically flooded with a lot of different confusing feelings. The course is really practical. It's realistic. The lessons are short and punchy, and they're really manageable. We're not trying to set you up for some long exploratory
you know, super in-depth, burdensome experience. We want something really helpful for you right now. We all need help with our anxiety. So being surrounded by more calm and less chaos can really help. So now's a good time to clear out the clutter so we can focus on what's really important in our lives. So find out more at zestfulaging.com. You'll see more about this under the web courses tab. If you have any questions, just shoot me an email at zestfulaging@gmail.com. Thanks so much. And stay tuned next week for another interview with a fascinating and inspiring guest.